This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil, returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz here with me talking Michigan's 19-17 win over Illinois. Steve, I think you and I both mentioned that we thought Illinois would present a physical challenge, push Michigan in a few key ways. I don't think either of us predicted it to be this much pushing. So we'll talk about what went wrong, but also what went right. You know, I was doing my post-game grades, and I came away, I mean, every single phase, passing offense, pass defense, rushing offense, run defense, special teams. I mean, every single phase had room to improve, but I also think every single phase had something that they can hang their hat on. Like, I didn't see any colossal, terrible performances from the Wolverines. It was just a closer-than-expected game on a weekend where Ohio State had a closer-than-expected game. TCU had a closer-than-expected game. Tennessee lost. You know, USC's game was down to the wire. I mean, even Georgia against Kentucky, only winning by 10 points and scoring 16 points. So a little bit of a survive-in-advance kind of Saturday for some of the college football playoff contenders. But, Steve, sticking to Michigan, because that's really the only game that matters in the scope of Michigan's development as a team, 19 points on the Fighting Illini. Illinois is a good defense, but certainly room to improve. I think the thing that jumps out the most to me, there's a few things, but really 8 drives inside Illinois' 40-yard line, 19 points. And, you know, we've talked about the red zone issues. I don't think this was as much of a red zone issue as much as it was just an execution issue. You know, you saw the deep ball passing, only 2 for 10. On pass attempts of 10 yards or more, Michigan was pretty bad weather day to pass. I don't think anyone should have expected Michigan to sling it all over the field, but 2 for 10 on pass attempts of 10 yards or more, 18 for 34 passing overall. Run game certainly was dealt a tough hand. I mean, Donovan Edwards is already out, and Blake Corum pretty much, I mean, he was out for the second half. He had 1 carry and 2 total snaps in the second half. If he had been healthy the whole game, I think Michigan was on pace for roughly 200 rushing yards, which is low by Michigan standards, but high by Illinois standards. But in the second half, obviously 19 carries, 45 rushing yards for the Wolverines. So, Steve, what jumps out to you most about the offense? It really felt like a game Michigan just needed to get through. Just get through it and don't lose and hit the reset button next week. I don't know if the weather will be better, but my general assumption, without pinning one name or anything like that, is that Michigan's offense will be a little bit healthier next week. But your thoughts on the offensive performance in this game?
Yeah, just the passing game all around just kind of discombobulated, honestly. And that's an all-around comment. Receivers dropping some passes, missing some opportunities. McCarthy with a lot of overthrows. Just not a ton of rhythm. You know, and I think that's got to be concerning for Michigan, because it's now been a while since we've really seen the passing game in a rhythm. Colson Loveland kind of did a good Luke Schoonmaker impression yesterday, which I think having some kind of tight end as sort of that safety valve or even a guy that can make a bigger play is just super, super important for Michigan. We going back to last week, we talked about the deep pass, but the intermediate stuff has been almost non-existent now for the last 3 or 4 games. So that's my biggest takeaway, because yeah, once Corum goes down, you know, I know Michigan, great offensive line, good running game. It's difficult to ask your third and fourth string running backs to be super effective against what appeared to be a very high quality run defense in Illinois. And got to give major credit to Illinois. Like I said before we recorded, I kind of wonder how a Wisconsin fan would feel watching that game. Illinois, super physical on both sides of the football, really looked like a Brett Bielema Wisconsin type team. And so, you know, credit to Illinois for really kind of, yeah, Michigan got punched in the mouth, I think, for the first time all season. So, you know, last drive notwithstanding, though, I think, yeah, biggest concern, I think it should be a clear concern at this point, is just an all-around situation with the passing game. You know, not just the receivers, not just the offensive line, which I felt like the offensive line was mostly okay. I think there were some inconsistencies there, but really, I mean, too many missed passes at quarterback and too many mistakes at the receiver position. I don't know what you think. I thought there were points in yesterday's game where McCarthy really kind of reminded me of games when Shea Patterson would struggle with the happy feet and the overthrows. You know, I kind of remember Patterson having those same types of issues, you know, and you know, that's not going to get it done when you're going to be playing for a Big Ten title in a playoff spot next weekend. So yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how Michigan comes out next Saturday, because yeah, Illinois really, which again, another question for you, Zach, I think Illinois' defense is better than Ohio State's defense. It's almost hard for me not to
think so.
Right. Yeah. But even with that, Ohio State's super talented everywhere. They always are. So it's not as if it's going to be like a lot easier or anything like that. But Michigan just has, they just have some improvement to make in the next week, I guess. There's really no other way to put it.
They do. They have to play better. And I do think Blake Corum or Donovan Edwards being there in that second half, this game probably isn't coming down to the wire quite like that. But at the same time, one, you don't know what their availability is going to be next week. Even if they do return, you don't know, you know, who's full strength or anything. But two, Michigan is supposed to be equipped to handle some adversity here and there. And it started to add up. I mean, it says something that a third of Michigan's passes went to a third string tight end, that's a true freshman, and a fourth string walk-on running back. So clearly injuries are taking a toll, but Ronnie Bell was healthy. He had 3 catches on 8 targets. Andrell Anthony was healthy. He had 0 catches on 4 targets. Roman Wilson had a drop. Cornelius Johnson, I actually thought, had a really nice, quietly nice fourth quarter. It wasn't the downfield stuff. His yardage doesn't look like anything jaw-dropping, but 4 catches in the fourth quarter. I think he, kind of almost like a tight end, was a little bit of a safety valve for McCarthy when the pocket was collapsing. He was trying to just find somebody, even if it's not a first down, just move the ball forward so that you're not stuck with a 3rd and 10. I thought Cornelius Johnson, for having a season that I don't think even he would say has lived up to his expectations, I think he had a quietly nice fourth quarter with those 4 catches.
Comment?
Yeah.
I want to know if you saw this too, and this is what, I hope this doesn't sound too crazy. The bad snap where McCarthy recovered and hit Johnson for the first down. Yeah. I'm telling you, I think the play of the game, if you watch the replay, the ball's like low to the ground and Tavier Dunlap actually hops over the ball to not make contact with it to give, like, it looked like a conscious move that he made. If Dunlap touches that ball, it's going back forward and either Illinois recovers or there's no way McCarthy's able to regroup and make the play for first down, and Michigan's looking at, what, 4th and 12, 4th and 13, outside of field goal range. So if anyone wants, like, go back and watch that play, and it looked like he was aware of the snap and like made a move to avoid the ball, which ended up allowing McCarthy to gather it and make the play. I thought I could be totally off, but that's what it looked like both live and I went back and watched it on replay. And if so, like, man, that's some 99 awareness from, yeah. from Dunlap on that play, because that really could have changed a lot of things for Michigan, you know, in the fourth quarter. So props to Dunlap for a super heads up play in a key situation.
Well, and McCarthy also, maybe it was crossing his mind, maybe he had time to think about it, but to pick up his knee literally, what, a millisecond before he picked up the ball or touched the ball even. You know, that's the little stuff that kind of has to break in your favor in these games sometimes. I mean, think about the Iowa game in 2016, which I would say is the most comparable. I know it was on the road, but it's probably the most comparable game to what we saw Saturday that I can think of, where a very good Michigan team, unbeaten Michigan team, just gets punched in the mouth, but also made a lot of, had a very uncharacteristic game. And in that game, nothing broke in Michigan's way. In this game, a few things broken in Michigan's favor. But yeah, I mean, you know, both run game and pass game, there were moments that I think Michigan, they can go into film room, and it's not going to be like this admonishing or this gigantic, like, oh, you screwed everything up. Like, I think the passing game, I thought Colston Loveland, I thought Cornelius Johnson made some really nice plays. And I thought, you know, we finally saw them do the screen game a little bit to the running backs. I, you know, with a couple people in the press box were kind of wondering, like, oh, were they saving that for Ohio State week? And it's possible, but, you know, also if you're trying to utilize your talent, those are the kind of plays that you need to do. And theoretically, Michigan should be able to win a game, even against a good defense, without all Schoonmaker, Corum, and Edwards. I mean, they have veteran receivers. And so while there were some good moments and Michigan did win, I think there were a lot of drives where they squandered opportunities. Whether it was, I mean, obviously not necessarily Blake Corum's fault, but the fumble on the 13-yard line to close the first half, all four field goals were drives where Michigan could have, whether it was play calling, where this execution could have kept progressing down the field. As far as Ohio State versus Illinois' defense, I do think Illinois' defense is better. I think Illinois has the best cornerback in the Big Ten in Witherspoon, and I think they have the best defensive tackle duo in the Big Ten in Newton and Randolph. Ohio State, though, one, they have a better offense, so it's going to sting more if you don't score. But then, two, I think they're more capable of the big plays. Illinois' defense is a little like Michigan's, where, I mean, they can force turnovers, but they didn't pick McCarthy off or anything, and there weren't any sacks, which credit to McCarthy for the pocket awareness. You mentioned the happy feet, but also to avoid a sack in a game like that and avoid an interception, you know, because the happy feet is fine if you don't throw a pick. I think the concern is that you miss receivers downfield, and then you make mistakes, and he might have missed a few. I know there's that one replay of Colston Loveland being wide open in the end zone, but at the same time, you know, there wasn't that giant. I mean, if he throws a pick yesterday, Illinois probably wins the game. Maybe they don't, but it felt like a game where the margin of error was that thin for the passing game, and that's probably why Michigan went so run happy in the second half. Steve, I don't know what you think about this. I felt like 19 second half carries was too many for Michigan. I mean, one of them went to Blake Corum.
Yeah, I don't know, man. We know what Michigan's identity is, but your two best backs are out. Maybe your two best players running the ball on second and 10.
When you're trailing, too. You're not running up the clock. Yeah.
In a non four down territory either. You know, it'd be what it wouldn't be that bad. You know, if they were like, you know, if they were running at, on second and 10 from like the, like Illinois 38, maybe. But even then, yeah, that's people, the play calling stuff can sometimes get overblown, but those decisions when you're facing a better defense and that's where you have talent. You have tons of experience at receiver. Like, yep. You have a talented quarterback. I'm not saying get the 10, but you should be able to get your 6 or 7 in the air, you know? And so, yeah, for this, you know, and again, it's one thing if Corum and Edwards are there, that I think that changes, that gives Michigan a little more leeway to do that. But, you know, maybe he gets there someday, but CJ Stokes is not Blake Corum or Donovan Edwards right now. And neither is Isaiah Gash. There were a few instances of that yesterday in the second half. Yeah. Where it felt you know, like Michigan, I feel like the term I've seen it mentioned before is sometimes Michigan almost kind of has an arrogance to the way they run their offense sometimes, where they
think that's a good term, because they firmly believe their play calling, their scheme, how they approach the offense in the fourth quarter was fully, we're going to score a touchdown and physically impose our will. And they didn't. I mean, they won, yeah, but they did it like they had the most passive comeback attempts that you'll see.
Yeah. Kicking the field goal to get it within two was the right call at the time, no doubt. I mean, that was, you know, but, you know, yeah, more like mid, late third quarter, early fourth quarter, there were just a few instances where it was like, okay, we get it, but come on, you know. And that I think if anything, in a way, that gives me that would cause me to have a little bit of trepidation about next week, because you, between Roman Wilson, Cornelius Johnson, Ronnie Bell, you're talking three receivers who have played a ton of snaps, have made plays in given games. Those guys need to be utilized in those situations a little bit more effectively. And I don't know. I just have a hard time buying that Michigan is saving all this. You know, that was a game that they easily, like, I agree. I think Michigan, I mean, obviously fortunate to win, but man, they caught a couple pretty significant breaks too that allowed them to, you know, kind of finish the comeback. So that would be where I know Eric All's out, Luke Schoonmaker out too, you know, and I think we've talked about how valuable Schoonmaker has been throughout the season when playing, but yeah, where is the receiver play gone? You know, it's just very frustrating to see them almost like it's a little bit of that kind of just beating your head against the wall type mentality at certain points in the game. And yeah, I mean, of course they came back and won, but it doesn't mean what they did was the most effective way to get it done. I mean, you're talking about a last play field goal to win it. I mean, it's just, you know, even me watching the game, not emotionally invested anymore. We've been doing this for so long. That's just frustrating to watch sometimes as a football fan, knowing you have a five-star level talent at quarterback and three senior level receivers. It can be very frustrating when you're watching it live.
It can. And I'm sympathetic to the weather. I mean, for those that didn't know, the winds were like over 20 miles an hour. The flags were pretty stiff. I mean, the whole game, really, there wasn't like some break where it was suddenly fine. So I don't think it would have been fair to expect Michigan to throw for 300 yards in that game. But how crazy is it that Michigan is trailing in the game? It's the fourth quarter and Illinois is stacking the box and effectively stopping the run. They're predicting run. That's how predictable Michigan's offense can get at times. I don't think that they're always predictable, but it does feel like they get into these rhythms, I suppose, where
it's like a lull. Think,
yeah.
You know, it's
where it's like USC, you know, I watched USC last night. It's like every single snap could be a 25 yard bomb downfield. And a lot of times it was, and granted UCLA is not Illinois' defense and USC is not Michigan's offense, but on paper, Michigan's offense should be much more proficient at mixing in the pass and a really effective deep ball passing game. And when both your running backs go down, it should not be 50-50 run pass the rest of the game. It can be if you're winning, but if you're trailing, I mean, there should be much more urgency. You know, that's where Roman Wilson, one catch. Andrew Anthony, zero catches. Cornelius Johnson, five catches, but not a ton of yards, and wasn't really a part of the offense until the fourth quarter. Ronnie Bell, three catches, but needed eight targets to get there. I mean, those are just surprising numbers from a five-star quarterback, from a veteran group of receivers, and also week 11. And Steve, I wanted to ask you about this, you know, because really since September, I remember asking Ronnie Bell and JJ McCarthy about it in week two or week three, because they use this phrase meat on the bone, which I think is a fair phrase for Michigan's passing game, where I think they're leaving yards on the field. They're leaving points on the field. I don't think there's been a game this season, maybe the Indiana game, where Michigan got all it could, or reasonably all it could, from its passing attack. So, Steve, heading into next week, I do you think it's possible, because J.J. McCarthy said he feels like the meat on the bone can come off next Saturday. Do you believe it? I mean, do you buy it? I mean, I don't know if it would be 18 for 34 for 200 yards again, but it just feels like this Michigan's going to beat Ohio State a little bit in spite of its passing attack. I think its passing attack can be efficient. I think it can be effective, but we have not seen it be a weapon for Michigan really all season, except when they played Indiana, who is probably one of the worst teams in pass coverage in Power 5 football. And in the last four games, the completion percentage is right around 52-53%. Do you believe that the meat can come off the bone in 1 week? Or is that going to be something that Michigan has to go into next week, understanding that it's not going to be a game where Michigan can have a balanced offensive attack and kind of needs to be run heavy to have a chance?
I mean, this will be the theme of our week. I mean, a lot of the questions for Michigan offensively are really fully going to depend on the health, right? I mean, there's just no way to avoid that being a factor in any discussion about their effectiveness on offense next week. But, you know, I've watched Ohio State. They're obviously there on every week. I've watched about as much of, yeah, I watch them quite a bit, and they're susceptible. So I think for Michigan, I think what it comes down to is just, they can beat Ohio. I think they can beat Ohio State without the passing game being the showcase, obviously. But we have, like, last year, Michigan was an effectively opportunistic passing game. We haven't seen that, like, in a while. Indiana, like you said, probably the best example. You know, throws are going to have to be made if Michigan's going to win this game. There's just no way around it. Can they? I mean, I think so. But a lot of players have to play better than they've played the last 4 or 5 weeks for that to happen, for sure. Because, you know, this is not going to be a – Michigan cannot do to Ohio State what they did to Penn State. Even if we think maybe Penn State might even have a better, I don't know if they're still statistically a better running defense than Ohio State, but like, I do not believe Michigan, like, theoretically, let's say Corman Edwards play with that, you know, I don't think Michigan can do to Ohio State what they did to Penn State. So there's a ton of meat left on the bone. Like I said, it's been a hodgepodge of missing open receivers. You know, there's that talk about the receivers not getting enough separation, et cetera, et cetera. We've seen examples of open receivers that are missed. Then we've seen receivers drop balls. Like, it's just been a mixed bag of issues. So I expect Michigan will come out first drive against Ohio State and have a really good scripted set coming out of the locker room.
They're great on the scripted drives.
Yeah, no, 100%.
They're like a top,
right?
Five, I mean, offense in the country.
You watch them. You turn on the game yesterday. They march right down the field, and you think, man, this is the best. Like, Michigan got a chance to obliterate them, and then they, you know, that was about it. You know, from a sustaining situation, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's really hard to buy that the meat will come off the bone, or however you want to say it, next Saturday, just because we've barely seen flashes of it in the last three games. You know, I don't know. I don't want to say I'll believe it when I see it, but man, I mean, it's going to have to be almost a total turnaround from just an execution and everything standpoint.
Yeah, I'm a little bit, believe it when I see it. I think the one thing that I think can be done between now and Saturday that I believe can happen is I think you can start to throw some of those short passes, get the screen game more involved. And it doesn't have to just be the running backs. It can be, you know, it doesn't have to just be tight ends in the short game passing game. I mean, Roman Wilson's got wheels. Ronnie Bell can create separation quickly. I think back to the Iowa game, you know, the Ronnie Bell takes the run, the end around, and scores. And that was like breaking a very good defense's red zone defense. So I think you can do more kind of in the under 10 yards thing, be it crossing routes, pass over the middle of the field. I mean, that's kind of the whole.
What about a jailbreak screen?
Yeah.
To a guy like Wilson, you know, like that, because that's, yeah, that's another area where it's been frustrating is these guys are receivers. So you think receiver, you always think downfield or even bubble, but like Bell's excellent after the catch. Wilson's a guy, if you give him a few yards, you know, he's a blade. He can get, if he gets in any open field, he can run away from people. You know, we just haven't seen, like, actually was refreshing to see a couple screens.
Yep.
Mixed in yesterday.
It's like, we 61 haven't seen that yards on two screen plays.
Yeah. Like, and again, that's something I can see them utilizing. I now that's a wrinkle I suspect we could see more of next week. I assume that's why. Because, I mean, had they run any screens to their running backs all year before yesterday? Like, maybe.
It felt like no. I'm sure they have.
There's probably a couple in there somewhere. But, like, yeah, it was just. But, yeah, I mean, these guys aren't just, you know, a blazer. Like, a guy like Wilson is not just a guy that needs to be down the field to make a big play. Like, he's a guy, if you get him the ball in stride and give him some momentum early, you know, he can make some really nice plays. And like, I think, you know, one of Ronnie Bell's best assets is as a blocker, too. You know, I mean, so these guys can help. These guys can be an asset in the passing game without having to catch the ball. It's just getting some of these guys involved. You know, do they give AJ Henning some opportunities next Saturday in some capacity, if as long as he's back 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I agree. That's the other thing that's been kind of mystifying, or however, whatever word you want to use, like, that describes a mystery, is, you know, there are other ways that these receivers can be effective in the passing game, but we just really haven't even seen them attempt it that much. I mean, they hit the bubbles early on in the season and then just kind of went away from it. Like, we're not seeing many bubble screens anymore, are we? I mean, it's like,
no,
but it wasn't early in the season. I can't remember if it was, might've been one of the non-conference games even, but like, they were just pounding that play to death, and it was really effective. Maybe they just had that in their back pocket and they're going to try to utilize that next week. Ohio State would be the perfect type of team to run that stuff against. I think Michigan can beat Ohio State on the edge with your receivers blocking their defensive backs, and it will make their linebackers have to think a little bit harder. But
yeah. And that's something I think can be done between now and Saturday. What I'm very skeptical of, and I'm a little bit more believe it when I see it about it, is anything 10 yards or more. And this is not to suggest that J.J. McCarthy can't do it or his receivers can't do it, but there is a preponderance of evidence against Michigan being able to have an effective deep ball against Ohio State. So far this season, J.J. McCarthy is 38 for 83 on pass attempts 10 yards or more downfield. And that's against some pretty meager pass coverage. I mean, it's not like they're playing Iowa and Illinois and Penn State every week. I mean, that's against Hawaii's and UConn's and Colorado State's and Michigan State's and Indiana's and Nebraska's. I mean, they have not played this who's who of great secondaries this season. I think they've played three very good ones in Penn State, Iowa, and Illinois. Ohio State's probably, they're probably in that group, but maybe a tad below just in terms of efficiency statistically. And on passes 20 yards or more, yeah, I mentioned the completion percentage, 10 yards or more, 20 yards or more, it's even worse. It's 11 for 36. I mean, at that point, it's you're almost surrendering a down, taking a shot downfield. And I don't want to say that they can't do it, because I do think it's important to keep defenses honest by trying everything. But man, that efficiency is just not effective. And if you look at the last month or so, it's even worse than that. I'll pull up the numbers in a story, but yeah, it's just that I don't believe there's meat off coming off the bone next Saturday in the deep ball. But I do think this offense has so many different types of weapons, tight ends, receivers, guys in the slot, running backs. I mean, gosh, Isaiah Gash was making catches. He had three catches for 24 yards. And he was pretty open on the one that he dropped. Right. So it's been surprising that the Michigan hasn't utilized that part of its game more, to the point where I'm skeptical that they will suddenly break it all out against Ohio State. But I do think if Michigan's coaches are reflecting on, okay, this passing game needs to be better, I think that is one area where they can get better instantly. Deep ball passing game, that might take time. If I'm being honest, it might take an off season, you know, in terms of McCarthy and the receivers kind of figuring it out. Not just figuring it out, because I do think the throwing talent is there, and I do think the separation can be there occasionally, but I think doing it when the pass is contested, a guy's not streaking wide open, but you know, he's only got a step. Feels like there's been some issues catching in traffic while also making the throw where it needs to be, kind of the jump ball situations, I suppose. So that I'm a little bit skeptical on, but I do think that there is upward mobility for this passing attack, even with 1 week's notice. All right, we're going to hit a quick break. On the other side, we'll talk about the defense a little bit better, but certainly still some areas to improve upon or talk about. And we'll talk about more about Michigan's 19-17 win over Illinois. You're listening to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
All right, welcome back. Thanks for waiting. So, Steve, Michigan gave up 17 points. It's not a lot. You know, I think that's ultimately, for some, that is the only takeaway that matters. Is it was a close game. Michigan's defense didn't allow a point in the fourth quarter, made a lot of stops. I think there's credit due. I'm not here to dismiss that. I mean, Michigan basically said with that field goal decision, which I don't actually have any disagreement with the field goal attempt with 3 minutes to go, not when it was fourth and 11. If it had been fourth and four, I would have maybe said, you probably got to go for it there and count on either a defensive stop and a touchdown or count on a touchdown in the moment. But when it's fourth and 11, I have no issue with the field goal attempt because it allows you to win with a field goal on the very next drive. But with Michigan's fourth quarter, three field goals, the Wolverines were basically saying, we think our defense can hold up. And they did. They did. There were great fourth down stops. You know, Rod Moore, I thought, had a great stop. DJ Turner made a great play. Earlier in the game, I thought Mason Graham had maybe his most important game. I don't know if it was statistically his best game or not for the Wolverines so far, but definitely his most important performance. I'm curious about the third quarter, though, because Illinois averaged more than eight yards per play in the third quarter. Steve, I think you and I think similarly, but I'm just curious your thoughts on that third quarter. It seemed like that's where Chase Brown really was able to break free a little bit. And I think the thing that jumped out the most to me that might be concern might be a stretch, but I am keeping an eye on it because it has not been the case all season, is Michigan got pushed around a little bit, especially on run defense in that third quarter, where Illinois, who's built a lot like Michigan, they even have the same strength and conditioning program, even if they have different coaches in charge of them. But I am curious about that because that's a little bit more of a surprise. We're used to the passing game not being super efficient or not being super effective for Michigan. We're not used to Michigan getting pushed around on run defense. I mean, that was something you and I, when we're previewing these games lately, we've just been like, yeah, we just assume, you know, that they'll look extremely good. Illinois is a good rushing attack, but Chase Brown had his most efficient run game in over a month. And it felt like that third quarter, when the Wolverines really were supposed to be dropping the hammer a little bit, felt like Illinois was able to gain traction and they scored two touchdowns. I mean, Michigan hasn't allowed a third quarter touchdown all season. Illinois gets two. What did you see either in that third quarter or I guess overall about Michigan's defense that maybe is giving you pause a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, just based on what we've seen all year, the question is, was that an aberration or is it coming down the final stretch of the season? You know, or I don't know.
Biggest or thing to me, they haven't faced a ton of top-tier yes, rushing attacks this
that
season.
That too. Well, we talked about that last week with actually going into next week with both teams. Haven't necessarily faced great, like haven't faced offenses that are really good at any one thing, I guess, necessarily. So I thought the biggest thing that was a surprise to me. So, you know, Chase Brown, very good running back, but it really felt like it was more about Illinois' offensive line was doing some major work. I mean, Brown kind of had it easy, you know, and I say that again with the most respect, like excellent running back, best running back Michigan's faced this year for sure. Very good player, but it just, Illinois was moving Michigan. And like you said, we haven't seen it all year. I don't know. Can Ohio State gash Michigan the same way Illinois did? I mean, again, the talent's always there. They're capable. I know Ohio State's guard play has not been spectacular. I'd be surprised if Ohio State came out and did something like that to Michigan in the third quarter. Like, I'd be surprised if Michigan really gets pushed around like they did in the third quarter. I think it could have just been not to get weird. I wonder if Illinois was playing some inspired football, too, for Brett Bielema, right? With everything that he went through this week, you know, you always know there's always those kind of intangibles and factors that can come into play. But also, like I said, you imagine watching that game as a Wisconsin fan. I mean, that's what Bielema's bread and butter has always been as a football coach. And I feel like Michigan historically has kind of always struggled against Brett Bielema coached teams because he was able to effectively run the football. So, you know, I thought maybe for the first time, I thought Minter might have been out schemed a little bit in the third too, because Illinois was effective in the passing game for stretches there as well to help open things up in the running game. But yeah, it really comes down to, is your concern that Michigan's going to get pushed around again? I think they could get pushed around on at points and maybe a drive or two. I just don't see that sustained success for Ohio State next week. It's just hard to say because, neither team, in my opinion, Michigan or Ohio State, you know, Ohio State doesn't play Illinois, have really faced, because now we're seeing that, you know, Illinois statistically was pretty highly ranked on both sides of the ball, running defense, rushing offense, that they can be effective and that their offensive line is, aren't they also semifinalists for the Joe Moore? I believe that was
mentioned in the broadcast yesterday. Yeah, and they made a pretty good case.
Didn't they? Yeah.
Because even in pass protection, they only allowed no sacks as a part of it, but they only allowed three pressures.
I was going to say, I mean, not to segue.
Vito got hit once.
Not to segue, but to me, that was a much bigger concern going into next week than them being able to run the ball effectively in the third quarter. You know, I think Michigan will be good against the run next Saturday. Never know if it's good enough. You know, it's hard to say, but definitely not my primary concern defensively coming out of the game.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think the pass rushing for Michigan was, Illinois is a good offensive line. They have really good pass protection stats all season, but kind of like the passing game, this is week 4 or 5 where the pass rush just hasn't been, I don't want to say hasn't been a strength, but it hasn't been something that Michigan can really hang its hat on. There's been moments, there's been sacks, there's been big plays here and there, and there were some yesterday, but it's a little too few, too far between, especially knowing how effective Ohio State's passing offense is with a clean pocket. I mean, with a clean pocket, they're the best passing attack probably in the country. Under pressure, things start to fade. So Michigan's going to have to bring everything it has from a pass rushing standpoint next week. But yeah, that's a little bit of concern, especially, I mean, yesterday we talk about the weather and everything. Tommy DeVito completed 70% of his passes. I know that's a little bit his game. He actually is averaging a 70% completion percentage on the season. But you would think Michigan, for all of its really great pass defense stats, I think it was top five in the country in yards per attempt allowed, passer rating allowed, completion percentage allowed. It felt like Illinois got to have the passing game that it wanted to have. Because this is not a team, Illinois, I believe I saw a stat that they're 0-3 this season when they give up three touchdowns or more. So this is not an offense that can compete with its defense, but it felt like they were able to get the little dink and dunk passes that they wanted. And you know, thinking about Ohio State, some of those dink and dunk passes end up going for 50 yards with big plays after the catch, with guys creating just a little bit more separation, or Stroud being able to just throw over the top of a defense. So I agree. I was actually going to pivot to that direction, that I think the pass rush is more of a concern. I do think there's modest reason to be concerned about Michigan's run defense. I think Ohio State has the exact same question Michigan has, where they have their top two running backs are hurt. I don't think Ohio State's going to run the ball effectively if it's down to their third and fourth string guys.
You don't think so? Did you watch the?
I wasn't
half?
Able to because I was working, and they didn't. Right. They weirdly didn't have that game in the press box.
Hayden looked good.
Okay,
I'm not saying
good against Maryland or good against anybody.
I mean, they didn't run the ball for crap before. I mean, Henderson was definitely not 100%, but they weren't running the ball effectively. He definitely looked capable, I guess would be the best way to put it.
Does he look like the second best running back Michigan has faced all season?
Oh boy, I don't know about that.
It's actually more possible than I thought, thinking about who Michigan has faced.
That's, you know, I mean,
Anthony Grant, I guess, is number two.
Singleton.
Oh yeah, Singleton probably.
Well, no, but I mean, well, yeah, but Michigan shut those guys down. But those might be the, you know, Singleton could be the third or fourth best back. I don't know. Yeah. It could be Grant, but I thought Hayden looked. One of my takeaways from just both games yesterday was that if this is Ohio State and Hayden versus Michigan and CJ Stokes, I mean, I think I'd give Ohio State the definite advantage, even if Michigan's run defense is statistically.
And Ohio State's recruiting, I mean, they are the kind of team that they can find a third string guy who's like, oh, I don't know what Hayden's recruiting ranking was, but like, oh, this is a really talented guy that top five teams in the country wanted.
Stokes has been good, but yeah, I'm looking real quick. I'm sure Hayden, I know he was a 4-star level guy. Almost 3-star. He's in the top 247, but not like a 5-star type, but either way.
But as you know, if Ohio State's going after him,
Yep.
No, a lot of other good teams probably are too.
Yes. Yeah, that was kind of one of my big takeaways from watching both games yesterday. Is like, if this comes down to the third, fourth string back, you know, the other thing is too, you know, Ohio State, Evan Pryor was a 5-star. He, like, I think he tore his ACL. Like, he's been out all year. That would have been there. That would have been the guy who was a 5-star guy behind Henderson and Williams. So, you know, they're pretty banged up at running back when you consider that guy being out and then both Henderson and Williams really banged up. But, you know, are we talking pass defense now or passing? Because this history says whoever runs the ball better wins this game. But if Michigan does not get any pressure, and I know we've talked about this and you have the stats to back it up, Stroud is going to just absolutely pick them apart. I mean, it'll be Dwayne Haskins in, what was it, 17 or 18?
2018. Yeah.
All over again. Because that's to me, he's a lot like Dwayne Haskins was. Amazing pinpoint pocket passer when he has the time. I mean, even yesterday, Stroud made a few throws that I think only a few guys in college football are going to make. The thing is, he's able to just sit back there and wait. So yeah, that's why the Michigan's lack of pass rush, like, are they going to have to generate? Are they going to blitz more often? Or, you know, like, what kind of looks are they going to give him if they get to him, or at least they don't even, that's the other thing though. They don't have to like get to him as far as like the sack necessarily. It's just, he's a guy that if you
just get him off schedule,
yes, if you knock his rhythm off at all, he is a totally different quarterback. Just no way around it. To me, that's, even though the running game has, like I said, has historically been what's decided this game, and Michigan did outrush Ohio State in a big way last year, and I think that is what won them the game. They gotta get him off rhythm a little bit.
Yeah, and I was just pulling up the CJ Stroud pressure stats. His NFL passer rating, where the max is 158.3 and kind of anything above 100 is pretty good. His NFL passer rating under a clean pocket, 139.3. I mean, those are Heisman numbers. Those are number one draft pick numbers. When under pressure, it drops down to 79.5, which, look, every quarterback performs worse under pressure than in a clean pocket. That's just kind of the nature of the game. But that's a pretty, pretty stark drop off. I mean, his yards per attempt drops from 10.5 to 5.6. His completion percentage drops from 70.4 to 43.1. That's about as big of a drop off as you'll see. And that's a testament to how good he is in a clean pocket. But also, I think even as a second year starter, that is still a recipe to get him, to humanize him, I suppose, is get him off schedule, make him move around a little bit in the pocket, make him work quickly. And so that's, to me, that's almost like the key of the game. There are other things Michigan can do, of course, but that is extremely important. In terms of Hayden running wild against Maryland, I will just remind our listeners, Maryland gave up, 243 rushing yards to Blake Corum on a very high yards per attempt as well. I mean, that's really what started his Heisman candidacy or Heisman contention was, man, he just went absolutely nuts on really the first Big Ten team that the Michigan had faced all season. So take it for what you will. I don't.
They're definitely poo, but he just, you know, you can watch and see if a guy's
sure
looks like a good running back. I'm not saying he's, you know, going to walk in and be a star, but he looked like a guy that could be effective.
Okay.
For them, I guess that's really all I meant when I was talking about him.
Having not seen the game, I could buy that. I mean, it makes sense. Like they're very talented. That's kind of why you recruit as well as you can recruit is to be able to afford, you know, losses or injuries here and there. So that will be definitely something to watch. I mean, it's crazy that both teams, you know, we talk about how much this game is decided by who runs the ball more effectively. And yet both teams are kind of hobbled. I don't know enough about Ohio State's injuries. It feels like Michigan, I mean, the fact that nothing is structurally, you know, x-rays were negative, nothing is structurally off with Blake Corum. And the fact that he went out there and at least tried in the second half, I mean, it was pretty clear he did the one carry, but it was pretty clear in warmups, you know, not 100%. We'll see what he looks like in the next few days, but it doesn't feel like this is like an ankle sprain or anything broken or anything torn. My suspicion, if he came out in the second half, was that it was closer to a hurt than an injury. It could still be an injury. That's not a promise. Just generally, when you think about stuff with the knee, guys who walk out on their own power and jog back out 20 minutes later in full pad uniform, you wonder if given a few days to rest and recover, if they can be more ready to go than say a torn disc or something like that. Steve, I wanted to ask you about one more thing in this podcast, and it's I guess there's a little bit of an Ohio State, but less X's and O's, less stats, more demeanor or intangibles. I was struck in the press conference by, you know, JJ McCarthy. He's always smiling. He's always, you would think that every single thing that has ever happened on the football field was all part of his grand plan. But Ronnie Bell, he's pretty straight up with us in press conferences. You know, they both were really coming off as grateful that they had to kind of get punched in the gut a little bit and recover. And I want to get your thoughts on this, because I actually kind of think this specific team, I think everybody says it after a win, of course, but I actually do think this is a team that can benefit from a game where they, whatever metaphor you want to use, whether they had to, they broke a sweat, they got punched in the mouth, whatever phrase you want to use, because this team prides itself, I mean, really since last season, but all year, all spring, summer, fall, and press conferences, they took so much pride in feeling like they were the toughest and grittiest team in the country. And ironically, of course, you know, as soon as they build this team identity around it, they end up having their easiest 10-game schedule that they've ever had. So I wanted to ask you about maybe the value of that game 11 being tough. I think optimally, if you're Michigan, it's maybe not the week before Ohio State. It's maybe against like a Penn State type team or on the road versus at home against a team that is now 7-4. I think they're a good 7-4, but at the same time, I think Michigan would have maybe preferred to be punched in the mouth sooner in the season. But I want to ask you about the benefits of that, because I feel like every good Michigan team has been tested. And I think the great Michigan teams survive those tests. And I think the best Michigan teams, thinking about last year, how they responded to Michigan State, thinking about other top tier, you know, top five finish teams that Michigan's had over the past few decades, they're able to respond from that punch in the mouth, punch in the gut. I think sometimes that's coach speak or player speak. That's press conference talk. Like, oh, we really wanted to feel it. I think this team actually did want a gritty game, or to get punched in the mouth, or to have to kind of fight back, work up a sweat a little bit. And I think there actually is a chance that they could be better off for it. But curious about your thoughts, Steve. Yeah, it's just a part of their process, but it is kind of funny to me. For wanting to be such a gritty, grinded out team, they really haven't had to be gritty or grinded out a ton this season.
Yeah, I think, right. I think that's just their style of play lends to people just thinking it's, you know, gritty and yeah, but no, they really hadn't been challenged much, if at all, until yesterday. I kind of wonder, maybe you could chime in here. You know, they say, like, you know, new coaching staff comes in, it takes a while to like instill your culture. I know culture is something we've talked a lot about the last 18 months as far as, you know, basically coming out of the COVID season where this thing kind of did a 180 for Michigan in the positive direction. Do you think games like, say, Penn State last year, yesterday, is that proof or evidence, you know, that the culture has sort of arrived, or really that's where it becomes an actual asset on the field versus, say, like Iowa in 2016 or something, like, you know, like a game like that. Like, it is, you know what I mean? Like, it's because it is interesting. I fully agree. I think the way the game played out yesterday, I think in a way is, I don't want to say it's a best case scenario, because I think it was way too close for comfort for Michigan. I mean, we're talking one or two small breaks, not even big breaks, and this game goes the other way and everything looks totally different going into next Saturday. But yeah, just that, well, even like McCarthy, who's, you know, not playing his best game, but is able to kind of get things collected and drive the team down the field to get the game winning field goal. You know, I don't know if it's a confidence boost, but like in a totally different way. Right, we can make the plays that need to be made when the time comes, and so yeah, I that's something I was kind of curious about. It was one of the first things I thought about, you know, last night, was, you know, comparing this game to Penn State last year. And I know they had already lost the Michigan State game, but you know, I don't, maybe the Michigan State game.
Jim Harbaugh did compare yesterday's game in the press conference to the Penn State win.
Oh, did he? Yeah.
See, yeah. Well, yeah. He dropped, he dropped the line. I think there are some parallels. I think there are some differences. This one was at home.
Sure.
I think Michigan got a little bit more of a triumphant, like the 44-yard play. I mean, it's as dumb as it sounds. I feel like the optics of a 44-yard game-winning touchdown is different than three field goals in the fourth quarter to like skate by. It's probably dumb.
Do you think Harbaugh likes the optics of three field goals in the fourth quarter to win though better than a, like, can't you see him sitting down today to watch the NFL, like just thinking like that he probably just loved the way that Michigan won that game. I just gotta think
it's because
he's such a, I don't want it, like a football purist, like he would think it was like the, that's how you win, like, you know,
yeah.
What a way to win a football game, you know, like,
well, that is very NFL style. I mean, I feel like 19-17 is such a, like, I feel like the Detroit Lions lose every game 19-17. Like, it's just, and I think, I mean, ultimately, I think Michigan's celebrating the win. I think the one thing though is, I think if they had, there are two things that could have been different. Is one, I think if this had been a road game, no matter what, I think they would have, this would have propelled, because that's what it is their momentum being built from this win, or do they feel like they kind of like backed into a victory? Which when I always kind of say, like, when a kicker makes four field goals, that's great for the kicker, that's bad news for everybody else, because that means that you weren't scoring touchdowns to the point where your primary source of offense was field goals. So that's kind of, I guess that's really the big question. That's not something that you and I can answer, is was this a game that Michigan can really build momentum from? Because they did. They finally got tested. They've wanted to be tested all season, and partly due to the Big Ten being down, partly due to Michigan being good, they haven't been tested nearly like they were Saturday, and they got the test. And one thing I was kind of thinking about, and we don't have to parse through it all like this, but had Illinois not lost to Michigan State, because that game was like pretty, could have gone either way, right? And they'd gone into this to Ann Arbor yesterday 8-2 with a ranking next to their name, I feel like people would be feeling a little bit differently about the game. I feel like it would have been like as dumb as it is, like one game earlier in the season that, or Indiana, I think that was the other game that Illinois barely lost. It was kind of controversial, to say the least, against the Hoosiers. If either of those games go the other way and Illinois is ranked, they're 8-2, it's a little bit less like, oh, Michigan dodges disaster, and more like triumphant victory over a ranked team that was pretty good. So just something to think about. I'm not making the argument that, you know, one way or the other on it, but it is kind of funny how much the optics influence the fan perception. But I also sometimes wonder if the way a team wins influences the players and how they approach game week. I mean, Michigan's 11-0. I assume whatever they do in practice and whatever their mindset is probably correct. But I do wonder if the gritty win, the gritty nature of the win, can have a similar effect to that Penn State game. Because that's the comparison Jim Harbaugh drew. That's probably the one he's going to tell his players about. Because I felt like that game last year, that was the first game. I didn't predict Michigan to beat Ohio State last year, but that was the first game where I was able to write a column believing that it was possible. I don't know if I had the same kind of, I don't think it was, I don't know if yesterday's win was quite as galvanizing, just in style, location, opponent, everything like that. But I do think there is something to be said about a team that wants to win gritty actually having to do it. Because everyone wants to be a gritty team. I think every football team in the country wants, you know, to impose their will, be a gritty team, be tougher than their opponent. But when you're winning every game by 10, 15 points, you don't actually know if you can do it. Now Michigan has at least done it, and it can go into next week with that in its pocket. I still think Michigan, this is going to be a very interesting test. We'll talk more about the Ohio State game. We'll have a whole separate preview episode. But it'll be an interesting test in terms of being on the road in a tough environment, playing a team that is more talented than you, something Michigan has not done this season. You know, I still think there will be a few things that are unique or new about the Michigan-Ohio State matchup, especially for Michigan's younger players. But I do think reminding yourself that you can win gritty, I think, can have an impact on the week ahead. For Steve Lorenz, I'm Zach Shaw. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. Be sure to check out all of our stories over at the MichiganInsider.com, Michigan.247sports.com. Got takeaways, got grades, got other stories. How about Jake Moody? We didn't really talk about him, but I think he cemented himself as Michigan's greatest kicker in history. He set the record for most field goals made. He's now top three in every scoring or kicking statistic that there is, and he's still got at least two games to go. And I thought, you know, finally gets a game winner, first one of his career. You wouldn't know it based on how he kicked it, but really strong performance from him. So I got a story about him. We got lots of stories over at the MichiganInsider.com. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. We'll see you next time.
CBS Friday, TV's hottest show is Fire Country.
I'm not a hero.
I'm in orange for a reason.
They're taking 12 months off your sentence. You're free.
Lady.
With a special epic season finale.
Now that I'm out, I need something to get me up in the morning.
You are a firefighter.
Used to be.
That will be unforgettable.
In the name of your life's happiness, go get your girl.
She's getting married tomorrow.
Says, when do you let anything get in the way of what you want?
The Fire Country season finale, Friday, 9/8 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.